welcome back to the Indie Worldwide Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Castrillo. Today, I'm talking to Eli Steinbach, a very longtime Indie Worldwide member and currently working on a Web3 referral platform called Sharemint XYZ. Enjoy. So you joined Indie Worldwide a couple years ago. Think back then, it was post-Crypto Fighters, but I'm not sure what you were up to.
Yeah, I had there was a bit of back and forth there. Crypto Fighters had like two lives, so it was it was definitely a few years after, but also then we came back to it. But I think when I initially joined, I was running an agency for sure, called Skilled, where we'd hire out freelancers, and I think it was front work that I was working on, which was sort of like an offshoot of the agency. And it was this component market. Well, it was two things. It was like a component marketplace for front end developers. And also, yeah, being, I guess, like a top tower for front end components type thing. That, like, there were two sort of iterations of that. Actually did okay, but I pivoted away from that sort of since, basically. But I think when I joined Indie Worldwide, that was probably like my sort of side hustle, I guess. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the site is still up. People
that.
Still sign up. So in terms of freelancers, it still gets people in. I keep the site running, but in terms of clients, is not it hasn't had like sort of clients in a while, basically.
And then, so that's old news, though. Tell us what the new hotness is.
Yeah, so I think after that, I moved. Basically, if I give a tiny bit about my background, I launched an NFT collection back in 2018 called Crypto Fighters. This was sort of a small side project, I guess, at the time. It was like 3 months, you know, even less. We probably put it together in 6 weeks. It was six of us. We were also running other things at the same time. If you're loading this up on screen. So this is the original 2018 Crypto Fighters site. We actually then a few years later, when sort of NFTs came back into fashion, we tried to relaunch it as Crypto Fighters Alliance, which was like a very much upgraded version of this, for like 3D fighters, and put a good amount of effort into that. But yeah, a bit about sort of, wow, I'm forgetting the question I was answering, what I'm up to right now. I mean, right now today I'm doing Sharemint, where we're still focused on Web3 basically. And we basically a Web3 referral platform. So if you, or partnerships even, I should say. So let's say similar like platforms, maybe within the world of Web2, or things like PartnerStack, Impact.com. But really, like, I mean, also on the partner network side, there's, I guess, like a ton of different companies in that space in Web2. But within Web3, marketing tools are quite lacking, basically. And you can sort of force fit Web2 tooling a bit, but also they just sort of don't really work great. So that's sort of what we're up to now. This is sort of a few, in the last 2 years, basically, I sort of stepped down a lot from sort of the agency I was running. We did a lot of like Web2 and Web3 projects through that, basically. But my heart has always been more in terms of like sort of building my own products. And even when I was running that like sort of freelance network, I was always building stuff on the side. Frontwork, for example, was one of them. And that was more of an offshoot of the agency. And then in the last 2 years or so, like a lot of what I've done, I've like sort of really tried to focus in one area. And I've like sort of had a heavy focus basically on Web3. We had an NFT analytics platform that actually did decently well. But we shut it down a few months ago because it was just too expensive to keep running, and it stopped generating revenue for us. And then we pivoted basically into Sharemint, and so that was around 9-10 months ago.
So is this the Royal We, or is there
dual team? No, it's not the Royal We. Frontwork. No, you know what? Everything, I think most of what I've done is with at least one other person, but no, Sharemint is not the Royal We. I have a co-founder called Amir. And yeah, we've been working full time together for like a year and a half or so.
So it's been different Wees throughout, different.
Year and a half, it's been me and Amir, like, let's say Exodia, me and Amir, Crypto Fighters Alliance, like the V2 of that was me, Amir, and a bunch of other people, also some of the original people from Crypto Fighters. And then Sharemint as, like me and Amir, basically. We have like some helpers here and there, but it's mostly just us two.
Nice. So it sounds like you've been working with your co-founder, Amir, for a while on various projects.
Yeah, we met around 5 years ago. We organized a blockchain hackathon together in 2018. And then, two-ish years, a year and a half ago, we started working in together, basically. He had actually this platform we were working on. had actually been building it like a few years prior, also around 2018-19 time. It was sort of probably a bit too early for it at that time. But the timing was a lot better, basically, when we sort of restarted on it around a year and a half ago.
So I feel like a lot of indie hackers, a question I see all the time is, how do I find a co-founder? How do I find somebody I can work with?
Yeah.
How did you guys find each other to work on that initial hackathon? And how did you know, like, oh, this is a business marriage that can last?
Yeah, well, there were like, look, honestly, there were like 3 years in between where we weren't working together. Like that hackathon, it was like, you know, they're quite intensive actually to organize. It's like really like running. Okay, you know, so it's like running.
Yeah,
and
I organized some hackathons back in college. I helped out on a hackathon called BitCamp and another one called Technica that were very involved, like multi-day 1500 person plus events, and it traumatized me.
This was, I mean, at least like you got huge numbers there. This was sort of the opposite, where I think for the event itself, like in the hacking part, we probably had around 30-ish people. And then we like maybe 100, 200 at sort of like the talks that we ran alongside it as well. But the challenge for us was, yeah, I mean, 1500, so that sounds crazy. But for us, it was like the same marketing and growth hacking you do sort of as a startup founder. Like we had to do all of that for like the hackathon. It was based in Tel Aviv. It was crypto 2018. So like there aren't that many people interested in it. Even if you do that day, we're actually organizing one in a few weeks from now in collaboration with another organization. But this time around, I think it'll be a lot easier because they're doing most of sort of the lifting around sort of marketing and everything like that. But back then it was just, yeah, it was just such a challenge, I guess. Like everything, like getting the sponsors, the location, the grinding away to get them like 30 people, which was like a big success, like relatively, like we were happy with
it.
Yeah,
I think
I mean,
hackathons are awesome startup training because they're basically startups with a time bomb attached to them, right? Like, let's rush, build a whole startup in like a month, and then it's gone. And so we can figure out really quick, do we like this or not? And then it's gone, right? And then you move on.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, there are benefits like for the network and like future connections and so on. And so yeah, it's funny. We said we'd never do it again, and we're mostly not doing it again. But like because we're doing it in collaboration with someone else in a few weeks' time, seemed like a good opportunity where they take a ton of the heavy lifting, and we'd be able to focus more sort of on the event, which is like much lower effort, basically, like the actual day of the event, basically.
So what's the elevator pitch for Sharemint? And ideally, in a way that would make sense to someone who's not already like deep into the cryptoverse.
Yeah, sure. So where do I start? I mean, I'll give you the one liner, which maybe it is more focused for Web3 people, but we basically make it easy for Web3 projects to launch an affiliate or referral program and then help them partner with top names in the space. To be honest, like that part, hopefully is understandable to people, but helping team, like if it was a Web3 company, we're basically helping them with growth via referral programs. And there's, a whole bunch of companies in Web2 doing things like that. In terms of sort of the Web3 angle, basically sort of how I see like the, like, I guess how Web3 has developed, like the early years were very much about sort of the underlying infrastructure, like blockchains like Bitcoin and Ethereum and other layer ones. But that was like sort of the blockchain itself. And the idea was that sort of like then apps would be built on top of it, or decentralized apps and other businesses. And then anyway, that basically has happened. Like we've very much progressed from like sort of the early days where it's literally just sort of the infrastructure and also a lot of like speculative stuff around tokens. And we still have the token speculation, but maybe not as much as it was before. And we're starting to see more and more real businesses launch on it in all sorts of ways. I can give some examples of different businesses. But
what kind of businesses does this make sense for? Is it like NFT projects trying to get people to buy more verified trolls or whatever? Or is it like more like service-based businesses or conferences, or who should use this?
Yeah, exactly. So the initial focus was NFT mints is a good one. A bunch of the early customers have been in that sector, DeFi protocols, and then I would say Web3 gaming. But then going beyond that, we have actually worked with a lot of the major, let's say, conferences within the space, where very much, a lot of what they do is like similar like Web2 Eventbrite type programs, but the benefit of working with us is like we work with a lot of partners within the Web3 space, or affiliates, I guess, within the Web3 space, communities, thought leaders, and so on. And then, and sometimes they do have, let's say, like NFT ticket purchasing. So they're like, it does integrate a bit better into our stack. But yeah, there are other, there's services business as well. Like it could be tech software. It could be really like anyone like doing anything around crypto. At the end of the day, they want to sort of grow their business. They want to incentivize people to share, their project or their company. So yeah, we try and help out sort of throughout. But I would say the core product, like initially what we were aiming for, was more businesses, like more like Web3 native businesses, where it's not just like a conference which happens to be for Web3, but the entire stack is Web2, meaning it's still Eventbrite, but really like businesses where they're taking money in crypto. Like an NFT mint is almost always you're paying in Ethereum or Solana or some other token, or DeFi protocols are fully, you know, they live on chain. You can trade on chain, you can borrow on chain or whatever it is. So those platforms, that's sort of where the initial or main focus of for what we do really is, and where we're sort of bringing something slightly new to the market.
How do you kick off a Web3 business? Is it different from trying to launch another business in terms of getting initial traction and users, or is it the same kind of process?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I would say it's quite similar. There are like certain techniques you can use within Web3 that probably wouldn't work amazingly well in Web2. But I would say for the most part, like you want to find where your users are and grab their attention. Let's say for us, a lot of the users in Web3, I mean, Twitter's obviously a big place, Telegram groups, Discord communities, that's where you're going to find a lot of potential users. And sort of, yeah, partnering with the right people that have already got reach to these users. Those are some of the things that we've been doing initially, to sort of grow our business and get started. And then if talking about, there are like Web3 angles, like if you've heard of like airdrops and sort of free NFT mints, things like that. We did that a bit in the past. Let's say our Twitter grew to around 70,000 users, and that happened because of like free NFT airdrops we were doing. We had a collection of like these five giveaways. It didn't cost anything. I mean, it took a bunch of time to sort of get things up, but there was no real cost, and a lot of people would then follow to try and like as like sort of to get on the allow list to get one of these free NFTs. If it's a good strategy, like I'm not really sure, because you end up getting tons of like sort of fake and low quality followers. It wasn't bots, but it was like sort of like human type bots, where that is not a 70,000 user account if you compare it to like sort of like a 70,000 real with real users and people that want to follow like organically. That's like, that's got incredible reach and can really get out to a lot of people. Our account doesn't have that reach at all.
Yeah, so you mentioned earlier tokens and like airdropping. Does that mean there's like a token behind ShareMint that people can kind of like speculate on?
No, we don't have that. It's probably not a direction we'll go in, not in the foreseeable future. Yeah, we've never launched like a regular token. Before ShareMint, we ran a platform called Ixodia, which was NFT analytics, and for that we did, it's similar to the airdrop mechanic where you're getting something free, but here you would get like a free NFT, which it gave you like, it was more of a ticket that gave access to parts of the platform. So if you think about like splitting the plat, I don't know, maybe even Indie Worldwide, like imagine there's five different channels and each one requires a different ticket to enter. So you could pay for regular Indie Worldwide and just sort of get access to everything, or you could get like access to certain parts of it. And that's basically what we were giving away. Like if you hold this pass, then you get access to this feature or this channel, basically, in the Indie Worldwide example.
I feel
So
like
yeah, it
I
happens
see
to
that
be.
as a green flag that there's no token involved, because I feel like all of these kind of like token-based projects, that like mechanism makes it seems like it makes it really hard to actually build a sustainable business, because if it looks promising, then you get a bunch of token speculators, which potentially drives up the cost of using the platform, which means the real early adopters never use it because it's too expensive when it's still kind of bad.
Yeah, I mean, also if you look at the charts of basically every crypto token ever, it's just like up and like just like downhill after that. So much of that is people got tons of free money and it's just they're dumping it all. It does help in the marketing sense that these projects do get attention from when they do that airdrop, if the big ones at least. But yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree 100%. The reason we've never launched like a regular token like that is what we're looking to build things of value basically. And like, but yeah, I think like
That's crazy talk, dude. You're in crypto. What are you doing? Building things of value?
yeah, I am optimistic like long term. That's why I'm like still in the space. So in 2019, 2018, I got involved. I actually just hated so much of what I saw, and I decided to sort of not be as active after that. But then, like now, even though we're like sort of back in bear market mode, I am a lot more optimistic, basically, on sort of the way things are going. Yeah, there's also a lot of good stuff, in my opinion, like happening, or there are real builders, and like long term, if you tell me 10, 20 years, I'm like quite optimistic. We'll see like how things turn out, but like that's why I'm like happy to be building this space even when it's no longer the cool thing to be doing, and like sort of everyone has sort of moved into other areas.
Yeah, I feel like bear markets are great for people that want to actually build valuable businesses. Because in the bull market, people just start to assume everything they're looking at is like a scam or like a get rich quick thing. It's like people get so frenzied that they forget like to actually extract value or to do something useful. Then if you can build a startup that works in the bear market, right? Like, oh, you know what? It's actually useful and valuable to people. It's the kind of people riding the hype wave are no longer there. It's the people that are actually somehow making money from using your thing. And then when the next bull market comes, like you're well positioned to actually take advantage of that upswing by being a legitimate player with like a track record, because you've been around for 2 years while everybody else was kind of in panic mode still.
Yeah, 100%. If I look back to like sort of 2018 and projects I saw around that time, which I'm like really like shocked they managed to persevere through sort of years of like I guess crypto winter. But like I remember at OpenSea, we were basically one of the first ever projects on their platform. And I remember like sort of like chat like having an old chat with the CEO like on Telegram. They were nothing platform at the time, and they were like sort of putting us on their platform. Like nowadays, I mean, you sort of automatically go on nowadays, but like they're like the CEO was sort of like manually like setting up crypto fighters, still owns a few of them. But they were like really it took like 3 years of like complete grind. And like zero. Like, I mean, some okay revenue, but you're talking about, I think by 2020, they maybe had like $20 million of volume the entire year. And if you think their cut on that 20 million is like 2.5%, it was. So it's like, I mean, it's I guess an okay number, but like it was like maybe they make like that they were like after years of grinding, they had like a few hundred K in revenue. But for like a startup with probably a few million in funding, obviously not like nothing to write home about. And then suddenly 2021 happens, and now like 20, even now in like deep bear market, $20 million of like volume happens, probably in less than a day. And sometimes could have been, I'm guessing there were hundreds of millions of volume in one day. And that back then it was like an entire year for them. But yeah, so it was like some others like Axie Infinity, So Rare as well. I remember like starting probably 2019. There's a bunch of those companies that are now all worth billions of dollars. And have generated probably hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue in that time. So definitely impressed by some of those teams that managed to persevere, and then when things did go up, like they like managed to ride that wave incredibly well.
Yeah, I think we're kind of seeing something similar now with AI, right? Where there's a lot of more obvious use cases in AI to begin with, so we'll probably see more survivors from this hype wave, but the big winners are all going to be the companies that already existed for a large part. Like there'll be lots of people kind of getting rich quick off of the hype wave, but the billion-dollar companies are all the ones that have like been building infrastructure for the last 5, 10 years. That's like your OpenAI and all these like kind of labs and stuff that are like spinning out into businesses. It's even like Google and Microsoft and big tech co's that have been building AI infrastructure for years, right? Now everybody wants their GPUs.
Yeah,
But in
it's
terms of
definitely
billion
going to
dollar
be.
companies started this year, maybe a couple, but it's hard to say who.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, that's a big open question for me. You see so many of these, like even like indie hacker type startups that get to like 10K MRR like within a month, which is crazy. But at the same time, there's like infinite competition. I do wonder what this landscape looks like in a year from now. But in contrast to Web3, like the value of all these startups is just like very clear. Like the reason people are using AI is because it actually helps them. It's tangible. Like ChatGPT, just like I don't know, half a year ago, it's just like completely changed the game in terms of like what we can do. And if I was starting something new right now, like I would definitely be like jumping on that wave. And I know some people I speak to are like, oh, I don't want to do it, it's the hype right now. But it's like
Hype waves are awesome for
technology
indie
has like
hackers.
significantly changed. And like if you're building stuff that was possible 20 years ago, then like have you really thought of something new? Or like maybe just using technology and like building new cool stuff that isn't was never possible
I think
before.
like hype waves are a great time to be an indie hacker because the hype does a lot of your marketing for you. And if you can just kind of take advantage of that as a solo founder, you can get a big boost initially that you might have had to grind years for, and maybe couldn't have afforded to grind for that long as an individual, right? But you get some kind of hype wave going. You just add AI to your startup name, you build something that has to do with what everybody's looking for right now. Then you can get to like five, ten, $15,000 a month pretty fast, which if you're just a one person team doing it all yourself, that's plenty.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like it's also like recurring revenue that's just gonna keep going. It's like, yeah, awesome. Like those businesses are already like if you sell a 10K MRR business, like I mean, it's probably in the hundreds of thousands of dollars if you're making 120K a year. It's like even within 1 month of a business like that, yeah, you're doing extremely well. How has it been for you in terms of like remind me, bot eat right?
Bot Eat Brain. Yeah,
Yeah.
it's been growing pretty quick. We've been growing somewhere between like 500 and 1,000 subscribers per week. So it's been going up and to the right for sure. Hopefully it keeps going in that direction and people keep opening the email and everything. Because it's a bit of a different business model than like subscription revenue, right? It's like maybe eventually we'll add some kind of subscription or something, but for now it's all like just like sponsored posts, like ads. That's where we make all of our revenue. So every one of those is like a new sale that you have to make. Sometimes we get people coming back, but it's a bit different than SaaS, where we can actually expect it to come back every month.
Right, yeah, the model we're using right now as well for our own business is similar. It's like individual sales, which it's going okay, but it's definitely like if we stop working on the business tomorrow, like sales just end basically. And yeah, we wanna, I mean, yeah, we charge more than what we charge for a month, but it's definitely a challenge when you don't have recurring revenue like that. And we're trying to add a bit more recurring revenue.
Yeah,
But I
so.
imagine it's a great time for you guys as well in terms of but because there's another AI company coming out every single day, everyone's interested. Imagine the sponsorships. There's quite a lot of demand for that right now. If you have access to 100,000 people that like care about AI and trying out new tools.
Yeah, we've sold out our main sponsorship slot every single day, and we publish every day for the last like 2 months.
Yeah,
And we've
maybe
got,
increasing the pricing to the point that you don't sell out anymore.
Well, I want it to be sold out because if it's sold out every day, then I know we'll publish every day. And if it's not, then the motivation to like actually get an article out wanes. Like I really struggled for writing the art writing every day before I focused on selling out the ads, because without that obligation, it was too easy to say, we'll skip today. And skipping today could turn into, we'll skip this week, or maybe we don't need to publish this month. It's like, no, it's supposed to be a daily newsletter. I needed some way to force myself to actually publish. So having some sponsor expecting it to get out there every day is actually, it's been really helpful for consistency.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm just saying if you have if I whatever I don't know what the amount is, but let's say it's a $100 sponsorship, like you might be able to get $300. Like if you're at full capacity, you probably are not at the absolute point of maximum revenue for you guys.
Yeah,
You
for
can
sure.
always lower it if you're like, oh, I charge $500, no one's sponsoring this week, then you could sort of like lower it to 250 or whatever the sweet spot is, so you maximize revenue and still sell out.
Yeah, for a while, what I was doing, I dropped my prices really low, and then I would, which every time we sold out what the inventory I had available, I just doubled the prices again until we got up to now we're at just like kind of like industry standard around like $30 to $50 CPM, which seems to be about right, where we're selling out, but not instantly.
Okay, awesome.
What is the, so you mentioned like the way your business model works. Can you go into that a little bit more? Like, how do you make your money and how many customers do you have and how does that translate into monthly revenue?
Yeah, so right now, like bottom line, we're making around 5-ish K a month. It ranges like in the 5 to 10 K. It's okay, sort of for where we're at. Obviously, want to grow a lot more. Because it's not recurring, so each month is different. In terms of the breakdown of that, it's basically like our main package is basically one ETH, which is $2,000. So in terms of like clients, each month we're talking about like a handful of clients right now. And then we also have like 2.5% revenue share fee. Like basically, if the project is paying their affiliates, let's say 20%, then the total fee is 22.5%. We're playing around with this stuff a bunch, honestly. We might adjust this a bit in the future, like start offering like cheaper packages, which are sort of less one-time fees. Like also it depends on the client. We'll like sometimes negotiate sort of different terms depending on what makes sense. It might be that sort of the percentage needs to come down. It might be like we'll do like a monthly thing of like a few hundred dollars a month instead of like sort of $2,000 for like, which is like the half a year package type thing. But for many of the projects we work with, it's basically a one-time fee because they're not going to sort of be needing it again like half a year later. But yeah, that's how we're set up today, basically. That's definitely an area where we'll be making changes, honestly, and like we've been experimenting. And it's a bit of a weird model to charge 2K just like that. But it's also nice because, yeah, like for each individual user that we do have, we're probably extracting, let's say, to the higher end, I think, of what we'd be able to extract today, basically.
Is it difficult, like operating the business when your income is in a cryptocurrency? Do you have to like exchange to fiat in order to pay for Web2 services and like, you know, your cost of living, your mortgage, your rent, your food?
So we've worked out a way to basically get the crypto into bank accounts. Definitely a huge hassle that side. I'm based in Israel, and our Israeli bank, like we haven't sent like money to it directly, like for the company account. So we've had to figure out things there. If they're supposed to become more crypto friendly, honestly, like I think they changed the laws like a while ago, but for the most part, I think anyone running crypto business has definitely headaches around that. We had a lot more headaches in the past. We've sort of managed to figure it out. We did raise, so yeah, I didn't mention this, I guess maybe this means can't be indie hacker, but we did raise a bit of money around a year ago. We took in $350,000, so most of sort of, and we generated a bunch of revenue before that as well. We had around 250K of revenue from our first product. So that's sort of what we've been working on for the last year and a half or so. And we'll probably look to raise a bit more money in the near future.
Do you have any advice for like indie hackers or people that want to go VC route? How do you start building in Web3? How do you build a product that's, you know, is not a scam, provides value, and will actually be able to last all the way through the next hype wave and the bull market after?
I mean, it's right now it's super challenging to build in Web3. It really like it just like ed doing anything in the bear market is tough because there's just sort of way less money flying around, there's fewer customers. I mean, recommendations there, like you've got to sort of really, I guess, like really believe or like really want it. Like just like running any startup is tough basically and requires perseverance and so on. And I would say that even more so for Web3, especially like when things aren't going great. I think like a lot of businesses that might be good ideas like long term, maybe in 5, 10 years from now, maybe aren't great business ideas today. And because of that, like having like some backbone of funding to allow you to concentrate for a year, 2 years or more, till things like sort of improve. I think like for a lot of Web3 businesses, it can make sense to raise money. There are probably still opportunities like to do things even without fundraising. It's funny because we raise money, but I do see like a lot of what we do as like sort of, we are right now we're super lean just like because of In terms of sort of the financial situation, like we've had to cut down a lot basically. Also, when we raised, it was actually supposed to be a larger amount, and when the bear market hit, we didn't take in the full amounts we had signed on. So I do see ourselves as sort of right now more similar to sort of like other indie hackers or small teams of people. But yeah, like advice would be, I mean, yeah, like don't launch some silly token. I mean, it's so difficult to sort of really like sort of get them out and like sort of really get a lot of people interested in them, but the vast majority of the time they're not valuable. Like they don't provide real value to people. There's on the NFT side, I think a lot of people might say the same thing there. I'm like more open to sort of ideas around NFTs, and more just because if you're talking about like membership passes or tickets or like things around that, I don't know if this is sort of what most people sort of think of when they think NFTs. They just see it as in like another speculative form of token and asset. But there, I think the projects doing that, like they tried that. Not every project, there's an infinite number of projects which is just sort of a face and like sort of like an ape or a lion or whatever it is, and people speculating on those. There are some like communities that are like I'm a part of, and like, you know, I bought those like more for the community value, and they've actually done well in price like over the long run, even with the crash in markets. But yeah, if people are doing things around that, I'd say like provide value to your users like any real business. And if it's in Web3, then yeah, you and it happens to be a membership pass, so that's sort of one way to monetize. Like you could imagine like an indie worldwide with like a $200 ticket, like as a Web3 community, but that pass happens to be like an NFT which can be traded rather than sort of just a $200 payment. That like sort of is up to the community, to sort of like up to you as a founder, I guess, what you think makes more sense. But I'd definitely be pushing like, yeah, it's w worth like trying to find things of real value. And also just because there's so much noise, and like if you want to do something which like doesn't actually help the users, like an infinite number of failed projects and went through already, like you could try just be another one of those like infinite projects that already exist. But for the most part, also I'd say like try and like stay away from like sort of the tokens. This is what we do ourselves, honestly. Like we've never really gone in that direction. And even when we have, let's say with NFTs, it's more like for clear utility. Like this gives you access to a certain product, I think.
Yeah, I feel like that's a really promising pathway for NFTs, because they can basically be used as an alternative authentication system, and they can be like a tradable pass, like you said, you know. So it's like all these like DAO communities, right, where a group of people come together with some goal, like, oh, we want to buy the Declaration of Independence, or like this piece of art or something. Or like I could see like charity organizations or any kind of organization maybe being run in this way, where people kind of like, when you buy a stock for a piece of company, you have certain rights about what that company does. You can go and like vote and stuff on what they do. NFTs, I feel like, should be used in the same way to kind of create these organizations where you have software enforced rights over what the organization does.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of regular tokens as well will be used for DAOs. I think what the DAO world is very interesting. I'm not sure any, like, no one sort of really cracked it, but just sort of the concept of like joint bank account around a Slack group or WhatsApp group is just like if everyone puts in $100 into Indie Worldwide Slack and be like, okay, now we're gonna just use this $10,000 we just raised that together as a community to vote on like different things we can do. I think that as a concept is really cool. And then yeah, like each of your tokens gives you like a 1% like stake in sort of the DAO type thing. What was I gonna say around that? Yeah, one of the biggest challenges I think for crypto, like in terms of like, I think there's a lot of really cool things that could happen, but it would be against securities law. So if you imagine that token is like a stock, well, you know, let's say we all put in $100 that we have now this $10,000 company. And we go and generate revenue, and now we're all making like $50 a month just from a $100 investment. So that could be like a really cool concept. And I mean, that's what companies are basically. Like you own stocks, you earn like certain rights in the company, and you get revenue from it, or the company value goes up. But yeah, because of securities law, so a lot like that idea, let's say, isn't allowed. So people try and find workarounds for it. But I think like a lot of these like crypto or NFT type projects could bring like tons more value to users than probably a lot of teams would want to. But yeah, you can't really sort of like do that without being a public company or raising privately from accredited investors.
So, what do your plans look like over the next 6 months, over the next 2 years? What's the game plan?
I think the last few years, I've been jumping around, across many different businesses and definitely enjoy being a founder. But, I think, doing that, has, sort of my focus has been sort of a bit all over the place, and it's been okay for me. Like, it's maybe a safer route, because I was able to sort of generate income streams and sort of also work on things I enjoy and so on and try to build a bigger business. Now my goal is really more to focus just on sort of the one thing that I'm doing. My idea, within 2 years, we'd still be running ShareMint basically. We would have grown a lot. We'd be sort of an established name in the crypto space. In the immediate future, we are looking to take in some more money investment wise. We're continuing to grow the business and increase our revenue month over month, but to sort of really buy us time and to be able to grow and also to be able to compete with some of the other names in the space that are sort of entering sort of our market. We do want to be better funded to go and do a bit more. But yeah, it's difficult to see like it's a huge grind basically being sort of building within Web3. And not necessarily having funding behind you. It's definitely possible. A lot of teams would have done it successfully. But during the bear market, yeah, it definitely helps to have sort of a stronger, I guess, a stronger financial backing to sort of explore more, spend more time on it, have more team members and so on.
Do you remember when you first joined Indie Worldwide, why you joined and what you wanted to get out of it?
I do not. I remember when I joined around that time. I don't know. Could I have seen it on an ad? Is that possible?
No, we
No.
never have run
Never
ads.
experimented with a Twitter ad.
No, I probably should, and I
Yeah,
haven't. We mostly just
I'm trying
advertise
to
through
remember.
like events and stuff.
Yeah, maybe it was one of the events, one of those, it was around the time that Hopin was starting to get quite big.
Yeah.
Maybe that was already a while in. I can't remember sort of what drove me to join. I think I probably saw you or Inti Worldwide somewhere on Twitter. And if I think back, actually, it was probably the first community I had joined, or at least that I had stayed somewhat active in. I think I've joined a handful of them over the years since. There's probably two communities in crypto that I'm active in, and probably two within Web2, just regular founder communities like Indie Worldwide, with Indie Worldwide probably being one of those two. I'm trying to think if there's any more, but yeah, I don't remember what sort of drove me initially, but now the benefit I get or see is just being able to interact with other founders in the space. A lot of us share similar challenges. I think hacker communities like this, always on top of what the latest and best tools are, what's trending in the market, how to be most efficient. Whatever it is, I don't know if everyone knows about ChatGPT, I guess, but tools like that, sort of just make you can make you 10x more productive. I think a lot of people that sort of we since we're all going through similar challenges, how do we optimize our businesses to work best? How do we set up our Airtable? How do we set up our automations, Zapier, things like that, and just another 1,000 tools. I think yeah, that's sort of always cool that if I ask in Indie Worldwide, or let's say Trends VC, probably the other Web2 community I'm fairly on top of. I'm gonna get the right answer sort of and know what the latest and best is right now.
Is there anything you think we could be doing better, or things you would like to see Indie Worldwide try?
Well, it's difficult for me to say. I haven't been as active as I would have wanted to be. I feel like nowadays I got Slack, Discord, Telegram. I got just like an email, got infinite mess in Twitter, infinite messages coming at me from everywhere. So it's been a bit harder to stay on top of things. I haven't been to sort of the monthly meetups, I guess, for a month, a while. But when I do see them pop up, I try and join. Overall, yeah, it's just a question of for me, it's more question of do I have enough time to sort of dedicate to different communities, and not specific to Indie Worldwide. It's just sort of all the different groups I'm a part of. I try and like sort of check in every now and again type thing and stay somewhat active. But yeah, that's sort of the biggest challenge to me. Just like if you really want to be involved, it is the time commitment. And when I guess everyone has this, but when you're running your business, it's just
Yeah.
that you have sort of kids and it's difficult to find the time of day to sort of be on top of everything.
Yeah. That's why part of why we started doing the newsletter is because it's a way to keep people in the loop that don't necessarily have the time right this very moment to join the events and stuff. They can still see what's happening. So once they come back in, they're not totally out of the loop in terms of like what's been going on. Probably should have started doing that earlier, but it's been a big help, I think, to help people stay connected.
Yeah. The thing I think most people like to do those monthly calls, I do find them like, or I feel like they happen more than once a month. But yeah, that's sort of like, that's where I feel like I get the most value when I am speaking to other founders, sort of like if it's one-on-one or small group chat settings, like 5 to 10 people. But yeah.
Yeah, we were doing them every other week for these last 2 months. This month we're focused on the like Twitter growth challenge, and then in June will resume probably every other week, or possibly even every week if people have the appetite for that.
Yeah.
Because there's like the more frequency, the deeper you can get beyond into topics because you like build up context with each other.
Yeah.
But everyone's busy as well, so there's kind of a balance there to strike.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Any parting wisdom for the aspiring indie hacker?
I don't know. It's probably all been said. I mean, everyone's got like a note from Yeah, I mean, there's an infinite number of things I could say. But I guess jumping back to maybe something I said earlier in the conversation, there's maybe the what I'd say is there's no right way of doing things. There's like every business is run in a slightly different way. If we're going back to advice of like, should you focus on just one business? Should you don't put all your eggs in one basket advice? Like both like are working well for a lot of people out there. Should you raise funding? Should you not raise funding? Like both routes can work extremely well. There are obviously billionaires that raise funding, and there was obviously indie hackers that are doing incredibly well as well, and like people that have failed on both routes as well. So yeah, I'd say like we're always looking stuff of the new best advice, but there's no rules to like success, and it really depends on you, what works for you, and yeah, there's so many different ways to succeed. That's my parting wisdom, I guess.
Would you have any advice for like 20-year-old Eli if you could tell him something? Not like buy Bitcoin, but like in terms of how to live his life.
Yeah, I was studying in yeshiva at age 20, which is like I like Jewish if you like Jewish study, I guess. I started my career super late. I'm 34 now. I basically started my career at age 27. Things have changed a lot in these years. I don't know like specifically if I had any advice. It's like completely different world of sort of like where I was at age 20, but at the same time, it also like the stuff I was learning there, even though maybe it wasn't directly applicable to business. I'd probably like, yeah, I don't know, do what you did. If I'm looking back, like over the last like few years within business, I'd be like, get contracts signed. That's important. Like a lot of the bureaucracy, things like that, like maybe like a bit more annoying or boring, but you can miss like a signature here or there, and it can massively impact you. And like, or has impacted me, in the previous years. And even like if things are okay 95% of the time, but then when like things go wrong, and for the most part I probably signed like well through my agency I definitely did a lot of like contract signing and things like that, but yeah, like sort of really always be on top of everything around that, I would say. But again, it really depends what you're doing and what the stakes are, and yeah, what's at play basically.
All right, dude. Well, thanks so much for giving me your time. We'll cut things off here and hopefully see you at that next Indie Worldwide meetup.